नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 12 एंटाइटल्ड वृत्रासुर्स ग्लोरियस डेथ। We are taking text 9 as well as 10. Ojasaho balam pranam amritam mrityumeva cha tamagyaya jano hetum atmanam manyate jadam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Our sensory prowess, mental power, bodily strength, living force, immortality and mortality are all subject to the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing this, foolish people think the dull material body to be the cause of their activities. Text number 10. Yatha daru mainari यथा पत्रमयो मृगः एवं भूतानि मघवन् ईशतंत्राणि विद्धि भो यथा। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O King Indra, as a wooden doll that looks like a woman, or as an animal made of grass and leaves cannot move or dance independently, but depends fully on the person who handles it, all of us dance according to the desire of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. No one is independent. Purport. This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrit, Adi 5.142. एकले ईश्वर कृष्ण आर सब भृत्य यारे याइचे नाचाए से तैचे करे नृत्य। लॉर्ड कृष्ण अलोन इज द सुप्रीम कंट्रोलर एंड ऑल अदर्स आर हिज सर्वेंट्स। दे डांस एज ही मेक्स देम टू डू सो। वी आर ऑल सर्वेंट्स ऑफ कृष्णा। वी हैव नो इंडिपेंडेंस। वी आर डांसिंग अकॉर्डिंग टू द डिजायर ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सनैलिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड। But out of ignorance and illusion, we think we are independent of the Supreme Will. Therefore, it is said, Ishvara Paramah Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govindah Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is a Supreme Controller. He has an eternal blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin. For he is the prime cause of all causes. Om Hare Krishna. I was just thinking that over here in our Srimad Bhagavatam also there is a match going on, as outside also there is this World Cup. Somebody told me it's not the World Cup, but it's the Underworld Cup going on. And the mourning period for India. Over here we can see it's like the Universal Cup going on. The entire universe is watching this match between Vritrasur and Indra. And Vritrasura is informing Indra that the match fixing is already done over here. It's already been fixed who is going to win. So Vritrasura is informing Indra about the match fixing, that Krishna has already fixed up this match and externally you are going to win. But Vritrasura knows that internally he is the winner. So we see in this particular episode, and also so many episodes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this concept of absolute victory and relative victory. Over here we see that Indra, who is relatively victorious, winning over Vritrasur, but in the absolute sense, Vritrasur is going to be victorious as he is going back home, back to Godhead. And just in the previous verse, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that in this case, Vritrasur is a Sura and Indra is an Asura. Now, if we look in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita's first verse begins with Dhritarashtra Uvacha. And Dhritarashtra literally means, Dhrita means one who is determined, and Rashtra means to achieve a certain province. So Dhritarashtra, who not only had this name, but he had the quality also, determined to get Hastinapur. So Acharyas explain how come the sacred scripture Bhagavad Gita begins with Dhritarashtra Uvacha. It refers to how we have to drive out this material attachment in order to get deeper into the scripture Bhagavad Gita. So Dhritarashtra is asking this question: what did my sons and the sons of Pandu do on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Which was a very, very motivated question. In fact, he was wanting an answer in favor of his own sons. And the next verse, the second verse of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya is speaking. Sanjaya uvacha, drishtva tu pandavanikam. So Sanjaya, the literal meaning of Sanjaya means samyak jayati, absolute victory, complete victory. So Dhritarashtra, who was expecting that just like Duryodhan and his party were always victorious in their conspiracies against the Pandavas, so now also on this battlefield of Kurukshetra, it might happen. But just the very fact that Sanjay is reporting, it's indicative that yes, relatively, the Kauravas were victorious over the Pandavas, and it appeared that the Pandavas were always being defeated. In the dice match, they were sent into the exile, and all that happened. But now Sanjay is indicating that absolute victory is going to be in favor of the Pandavas. So herein we can see that when materialistic people, they endeavor to become successful, the endeavor will appear to be very well planned out. And we see that this entire material world, so much activity is going on, so much endeavor is taking place for material success. An example is given that material success or material victory, which is relative, is like sitting on a rocking horse. So somebody who is sitting on a rocking horse, like small children, they sit on a rocking horse and they go back and forth. So much of movement, momentum is seen. But where are they getting? They are getting nowhere. So similarly, materialistic endeavor or material success is compared to this rocking horse, which is moving with so much of pace, but it's getting nowhere. Example is given in the Niti Shastra about the time factor. The example is given that Kala is playing a chess game against the conditioned living entity of this world. So we have all experienced the chess game in our life. So there are two people who are playing. So Kala is on one side and the conditioned living entity is on the other side. And the chess board is compared to this material world. And the two eyes of Kala is compared to day and night as it is passing. So Kala, who is very expert in playing this chess game, is constantly looking with those two eyes at the conditioned living entity who is anticipating victory, success. And what Kala does is that for some time, Kala allows the conditioned living entity to win. Certain moves Kala makes in such a way that it appears that the opponent, the conditioned living entity, is winning over Kala. So we see these success stories in this material world wherein people have achieved wealth, fame, beauty and all that. But for how long? Kala knows that absolute victory is going to be mine. And it's a big illusion that the opponent is thinking. Kala simply makes the match more exciting by allowing the conditioned living entity to be victorious relatively. So over here also we see the example of Dhritarashtra and Indra, the concept of relative victory and absolute victory. And in the Ramayana, we have another example. We have the example of Jatayu. We know the story. Ravan kidnapped Sita. Ram and Lakshman, they are searching for Sita. Sita, as she is being kidnapped, she looks down and she sees Jatayu, who was lying. And she is calling to Jatayu. And she is telling that, please inform Ram that this rascal Ravan has kidnapped me. Now Jatayu immediately gets up and Jatayu starts fighting with Ravan. And the fight which takes place between Jatayu and Ravan is explained. It was like two mountains clashing with each other. Jatayu was not any ordinary vulture. He was very powerful. But because he was very old, he couldn't win over Ravan. In fact, Ravan, he had a tough time. The charioteer of Ravan was killed. The horses were destroyed. The chariot was totally dismantled by Jatayu. But Ravan, who had his individual power, was winning over Jatayu. So much so that Ravan cut off the two wings and feet of Jatayu. But Jatayu's determination to save Sita was so strong and deep that Jatayu with his beak was attacking Ravan still. Now herein we can see in this example of Jatayu that he had some valid excuses to not go ahead so much deep into this fighting. The first excuse Jatayu could give, that Sita had just asked Jatayu to inform Ram. Sita was not imploring upon Jatayu to get up and fight to save her. Secondly, Jatayu could have given this excuse that I am very, very old in front of Ravan. Ramayana explains how old was Jatayu? 60,000 years old. Jatayu could have given another excuse that, after all, I'm just a bird. What a vulture can do in front of a big demon like Ravan. And Jatayu could have just done the formality, for a formality's sake, okay, I should do something in order to protect Sita. But he went all out, even when his wings were cut off, even when his feet were cut off, with his beak, he was trying to protect Sita. So he went all out to protect Sita. No excuse is given. And when Ram came and saw Jatayu in a pool of blood, for whom he just shelled out so much of his sweat and blood, even Ram, he doubted Jatayu. And Jatayu was just informing Ram that just like now I am about to leave my life heirs, your life heir Sita has been kidnapped by Ravan. And somehow whatever strength I had, I was just trying to hold on to my life heirs to inform you about your life heir. So Ram, he becomes so repentant. And Ramayana explains how Ram was lamenting for Sita before meeting Jatayu as Ram and Lakshman are searching. Immediately now Ram tells to Lakshman that I do not have any grief for Sita in front of the grief which I'm experiencing of the loss of a person like Jatayu. The grief of Jatayu has overshadowed the grief for losing Sita. And Ram personally, he performed the last rites for Jatayu. And it is explained that this was the victory of Jatayu. Although relatively Jatayu lost the hands of Ravan, but what was the absolute victory for Jatayu? That Ram personally performed the last rites. The same Ram who couldn't do for his own father Dashrath. So Ram is performing the last rites. Now, what could be more beneficial for a living entity at the time of his departure, that none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present, and not only present, he himself personally is performing the last rites. That's absolute victory. So if Jatayu were to be recorded in these success story books, he would be mentioned as a failure. But in the eyes of Lord Ram, he was absolutely victorious. So if you compare Jatayu with Ravan, what we see is that Jatayu, relatively, he was defeated, but he had the absolute victory for himself. And in case of Ravan, he was relatively victorious, but in the absolute sense, he was defeated. And we have so many other examples. We have the example of Bharat Maharaj, who fell prey to that deer, and relatively, he was seen to be defeated. But again, in the absolute sense, he was victorious. We have Ajamil, who also fell from his Brahmanical position, relatively defeated. But in the absolute sense, again, he went back home, back to Godhead. And we have the example again in Ramayana of Vishwamitra Muni. Now, Vishwamitra Muni, at one point of time, he had become so much infamous because of, you know, he fell prey to Menaka, then became angry on Rambha. We heard all of that a few days ago. So, Vishwamitra Muni, at one point of time, he became so infamous that he was sarcastically called Vishwa Amitra. Although his name was Vishwamitra, but he was sarcastically called Vishwa Amitra. But we see in Ramayana, Vishwamitra Muni is just waiting now to meet with Lord Ram and to surrender himself wholesale unto Lord Ram. So Vishwamitra Muni approaches Dasharath as he comes to know that Ram has appeared. And Dasharath, who is at that point of time, when Ram is just a teenager, Dasharath is thinking about Ram's marriage. And Vishwamitra Muni, at that particular time, appears on the scene in front of Dasharath, indicating to Dasharath that I am the person who is going to arrange Ram's marriage with Sita, don't worry. So one of the provisions for which Vishwamitra Muni approaches Dasharath is to fulfill this one desire of Dasharath Maharaj, which he had, and he couldn't see the indication that I just now had this desire for Ram's marriage and Vishwamitra Muni is coming. Now Dasharath, upon seeing Vishwamitra Muni, he makes this inquiry. Ashishtam punar janma jayaya. Srila Prabhupada quotes that very often. That this is how great sages, they are inquired about. That Dasharath Maharaj is asking, how much have you been successful in winning over your next life? Punar janma jayaya. It was not that Dasharath Maharaj, you know, upon seeing Vishwamitra Muni, hi, how are you? Not something like that. So this was the culture. He welcomed Vishwamitra Muni, and this was the first inquiry which he is making unto Vishwamitra Muni. And Vishwamitra Muni, he is so much pleased with Dasharath Maharaj's reception that Vishwamitra Muni is glorifying Dasharath Maharaj, that the words which you are using to welcome me, you are the best person I have seen in terms of usage of words. And Vishwamitra Muni is telling to Maharaj Dasharath that when somebody uses one's words, the words should be sweet, the words should be having some purpose, and words should be loaded with humility. And that is what I see in you. So he is glorifying Maharaj Dasharath. And we heard how the first Balakand in Ramayana is actually named after Vishwamitra Muni and not the childhood pastimes of Lord Ram, which is not much. And why Vishwamitra Muni has been named as the Bala in the Balakand, because just like a child, he is surrendering everything to Lord Ram now. So from his panditya, from his gyan, he is becoming a Balya. And from Balya to Sharanagati. So that is the sequence in Vishwamitra Muni's life. Now, as Vishwamitra Muni is asking about Lord Ram, that he wants to take Lord Ram along with him, Vishwamitra Muni is informing Dasharath Maharaj, because he knows that Dasharath Maharaj will be not willing to give Ram. So he is saying that, don't worry, I'll give full protection to your son. And over here, Vishwamitra Muni is playing a dual role. He's playing the role of an acharya, in which he's saying that I'm going to give full protection to your son. And also, he's playing the role of a sadhaka or a upasak. As an acharya, it is the duty of the acharya to give full protection to the disciple. So he's playing the role of an acharya by saying that, okay, I'll give full protection to your son, don't worry. Nothing will happen to Ram. But internally he is thinking that he is actually a sadhaka, upasak, and Ram is the upasya. And he is going to surrender everything unto Lord Ram. And Lord Ram, he is also playing a dual role. He is playing the role of a disciple, in which it is the duty of the disciple also to give full protection to the spiritual master. And he is simultaneously playing the role of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That he needs the powers to give all of that protection to his devotees. Now, Dasharath Maharaj, who is so much attached to Ram after a long time now, he's got a son and not just some ordinary son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Dasharath Maharaj is trying to hold back Ram, and he is giving a very beautiful excuse. He's calling Ram Rajiva Lochana. Rajiva means lotus. So Rajiva Lochana means one who has lotus-like eyes. And he is telling to Vishwamitra Muni that because his eyes are like lotus, and the quality of a lotus is that it opens up only with sunrise and it closes with sunset. And all of these demons for whom you want to take Ram, these demons become active after sunset. So if all of these demons, Maricha, Subahu and Tataka, they become active after sunset, what is this Rajiva Lochana Ram going to do? Because his eyes, just like the lotus, are going to close after sunset. So Vishwamitra Muni, he shows little anger that you know and I know the kind of excuses you are giving. And Vasishtha Muni intervenes. And Vasishtha Muni, after seeing the anger of Vishwamitra Muni and also the history and background of Vishwamitra Muni, he approaches Maharaj Dasharath and he tells that don't worry, Vishwamitra Muni himself is competent enough to kill these demons. But because he is performing this yajna in which he is supposed to be having Maunavrat, and therefore these demons are taking advantage of Vishwamitra Muni's Maunavrat and he's not supposed to become angry on them. So don't worry, he has all the powers. In fact, he has all the weapons which he has got from Lord Shiva. And if you send Ram, he's going to surrender all those weapons unto him. So Vasishtha Muni was kind of indicating that don't worry, Ram going with Vishwamitra Muni is like, you know, son going abroad for higher degrees. He'll come back with some more higher degrees. He'll come back with some more high class weapons. So Maharaj Dasharath now is convinced. Now Vishwamitra Muni has only asked for Ram. He didn't ask for Lakshman. He just wanted Ram. But Maharaj Dasharath is so much convinced now that he says, okay, one bonus. Lakshman also you take. So Lakshman also is given. And now Vishwamitra Muni, Ram and Lakshman, as they are leaving the palace of Maharaj Dasharath. So now, just like, you know, traveling mendicants, they are just walking by foot. And Vishwamitra Muni, he sees that at the end of the day when they have reached the southern banks of Sarayu, he sees that Ram and Lakshman have become so fatigued and tired. So Vishwamitra Muni, he gives some mantra aushadhi. And with that mantra aushadhi, just chanting those mantras, all the fatigue and tiredness goes away. So he gives it to Ram. And Ram is thinking, looking at Lakshman, that, you know, Lakshman, what about his fatigue and his tiredness? So Ram gives those mantras to Lakshman. So till now, Lakshman was the brother and the servant of Lord Ram. But now after receiving these mantras from Lord Ram, Lakshman becomes Bhrata, Dasya and also Shishya. He becomes a disciple of Lord Ram after receiving these mantras from Lord Ram. And on the banks of Sarayu now, it is time now for everyone to take rest. So Vishwamitra Muni, he prepares a Trinashayana, just, you know, a bed made out of straw to make sure that there should not be so much discomfort for these princes. So they are lying down, and in the morning, Vishwamitra Muni gets up and he sees that Ram and Lakshman are still, they are deep asleep. So Vishwamitra Muni is the only sage who is seeing this wonderful darshan of Lord Ram asleep. It was only Vishwamitra Muni and Kaushalya who had the fortune to see Ram in this mudra of being asleep. And Vishwamitra Muni is so much pleased, remembering Kaushalya, that he is pronouncing, saying, Kaushalya Supraja Rama Purva Sandhya Pravartate Uttisht Narashardulya Kartavyam Daivamahnikam. This first shloka from the Venkata Suprabhatam, uttered by Vishwamitra Muni, and he is glorifying Kaushalya. That Kaushalya, she is that fortunate lady who has begotten you, Ram. And she is very pleasing because Dasharatha Maharaj, he made a scene when I wanted you. But Kaushalya, she never retaliated. So Kaushalya Supraja Rama Purva Sandhya Pravartate. Just like you were born from the womb of Kaushalya, similarly Purva Sandhya, the eastern horizon is the womb for the sun to take birth. Now this sun, which dispels the darkness of this world, is nothing compared to you, Ram, who is also like a sun. But what kind of sun you are? Now sun has, in English of course, S-U-N and S-O-N both. What kind of sun, Surya, you are? That you dispel the darkness from within. Whereas this sun who is born from the eastern horizon just dispels the darkness from without, from outside. And then he is calling Lord Ram Narashardulya, that you are tiger amongst men and you have come as a human being. So therefore, please perform your activities. Get up, Uttishtha. And your kartavya is pending now to be fulfilled. So like that he wakes up Lord Ram in such a beautiful way. And as they proceed further, they reach a place called Stanva Ashram. And over there, Lord Ram is inquiring from Vishwamitra Muni that what is this place? Kindly explain to me the history about this place. And Vishwamitra Muni, he smiles at Lord Ram, indicating that you know everything. You are the Supreme Lord. But just you are enacting the role of being a human being, so you are asking me. So upon your order, I'll explain about this place. And Vishwamitra Muni explains that this Tanva Ashram was the place where Lord Shiva, he was performing austerities before he got married to Parvati. And Cupid, Kamadev, attacked Lord Shiva in order to dissuade him from his tapasya. And Lord Shiva burnt Kamadev. So Lord Shiva made Kamadev into Anang without any limbs. And therefore this place was also known as Angadesh. And herein, the acharyas explain that Vishwamitra Muni, who is acting like a sadhaka, is indicating that a sadhaka who has to deal with kaam or lust within the heart has to first of all make it anang. Just like Lord Shiva made Kamadev anang at this place. So a sadhaka, in order to tackle with this lust problem, has to make it ananga, limbless. And what does that mean? That the kama, the lust, should not be hooked on to the body and the senses. When lust comes in contact with the body and the senses, then it has all the weapons to attack the sadhaka. So over here, Vishwamitra Muni is indicating that for a sadhaka, in order to deal with lust, it has to be ananga. And as they proceed further, they reach another place. And this place, it appears to be a god-forsaken place. It had all the symptoms of tamogun. Lord Ram again asks Vishwamitra Muni about this place now. And Vishwamitra Muni explains that this place is called Malada and Karusha provinces. And he explains the story that Indra, when he killed Vritrasur, he came at this place and he bathed in the Ganges in order to purify himself. So because Indra had this sin of killing Vritrasur, in order to purify himself from that sin, he came to this place and he took bath in Mother Ganga. And because he was purified, therefore this place is called Malada and Karusha, which means Malada means Manoveg and Karusha means the Sharirveg, the urge of the body and the mind. So these places, they got this name after Indra, who purified himself of the Manoveg and the Sharirveg. But then Lord Ram is asking, if this place is so sacred that it purified Indra of these two urges, how come I see that all the symptoms, the mode of ignorance over here? And Vishwamitra Muni then informs that this is because of Tataka. This Tataka who represents avidya. So yes, a person might be purified of Manoveg and Sharirveg. But when Tataka attacks this place or avidya attacks the sadhaka, then a person again becomes contaminated and is troubled by the mind and by the body. And then he explains the story, the birth of Tataka, and Tataka, how she got married to another Yaksha and begot Maricha, was the son of Tataka. So after informing about Tataka, Vishwamitra Muni is telling to Ram that she is the owner of this province now, and she might come any time. And this is the first person, the first Rakshasi which you have to kill. So Ram is very much surprised, and he's thinking within himself that what a coincidence is this, that, you know, as Krishna also I have to kill Putana, who is also the first Rakshasi, the first demoness. And here in this incarnation, the first Rakshasi is also a woman, which represents avidya, as Putana also represented avidya. So Ram kills Tataka. In fact, Ram, upon seeing Tataka, he is thinking that she is not worthy of being killed. Maybe I should just handicap her, kill, you know, take out some of her limbs. So looking at Lakshman, Ram is saying that I don't have this heart to kill this Tataka. And what he does, he simply just attacks Tataka first, just dislodging her limbs. But Tataka is very fiercely attacking Ram. So Ram realizes that she is no ordinary demoness. So Ram, he then makes her unconscious. And that is the time Lakshman, he jumps and he cuts off her nose and ears, makes the first experiment on Tataka, as he's going to do later on also on Surbhanaka. So the first experiment was on Tataka, and then she becomes invisible. So Ram realizes, and Vishwamitra Muni tells that, please do not spare her. Don't think that because she is a woman, a female, so you should spare her. Immediately kill her. So Vishwamitra Muni is indicating that since Tataka is representing avidya, avidya should be destroyed completely. If avidya is just made handicap, then she becomes maybe invisible and retaliates more in a very, very dangerous way. So then Ram takes out his Shabda Bedi Baan and kills Tataka and completely destroys Tataka. Now, as they proceed further, when Tataka is destroyed, which is indicative of the avidya which is destroyed within this sadhaka's life, this is the time when Vishwamitra Muni, he is surrendering all his weapons to Lord Ram. He is so much happy with Lord Ram that all the weapons which Vishwamitra Muni had acquired all through his life, now he is surrendering everything. So the acharyas explain that when avidya is destroyed, then the sadhaka surrenders everything, whatever he possesses, unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And using all these weapons of Vishwamitra Muni, Ram is going to destroy Maricha and Subahu. And Maricha and Subahu, they represent the sadhaka's Sanchit Karma and Agami Karma. So the acharyas wonderfully explain that Tataka represents avidya. When avidya is destroyed, then the sadhaka surrenders everything unto the Supreme Lord. And using that surrender, Supreme Lord destroys the Sanchit and the Agami Karma of the sadhaka, represented by Marich and Subahu. Marich represents Agami Karma and Subahu represents the Sanchit Karma. So as these two demons attack now, the yajna begins of Vishwamitra Muni, 6-day yajna. At the end of the 6th day, when these two demons come, so Ram, he is ready to attack them. But as far as Marich is concerned, Ram doesn't kill Marich. What Ram does is, Ram simply throws Marich 800 miles. Doesn't kill. Because Ram is thinking, this Marich is going to help me in my mission in future. So the agami karma of a sadhaka, sometimes the Supreme Lord doesn't destroy at that very moment. Just like Maricha is not destroyed. So the agami karma sometimes is kept in order to be used in future to purify that sadhaka. Just like Maricha was not destroyed by Lord Ram. But as far as Subahu, which was the Sanchit Karma, Lord Ram used the Agni Astra and burnt totally Subahu into ashes. And that's how the Sanchit Karma is destroyed when the sadhaka surrenders everything unto the lotus feet of Lord Ram. So Vishwamitra Muni, he becomes so much pleased as he is surrendering everything. And now he is telling to Lord Ram that this particular place, which is known as Siddha Ashram, where Vishwamitra Muni was residing, this place has now received its name in its real purpose. Why? Because I have surrendered everything unto you, I have achieved the real Siddhi now. Although Vishwamitra Muni was a Siddha Purush, he has achieved so much Siddhi. But he is indicating that now this is the time when I have achieved the real Siddhi in surrendering everything unto you. And over here, Vishwamitra Muni then implores upon Ram and Lakshman to come to Mithila. And over there he is going to unite Ram with Sita, which was another provision for which he had called for Lord Ram. And it is explained that in the whole of Ramayana, Vishwamitra Muni is nowhere to be seen or heard, because he was just waiting when he would surrender everything unto Lord Ram and when he would unite Ram with Sita. And then he informs all of his rishis and disciples in the Siddha Ashram that I'm not going to come back. From there, he goes to Himalayas, and that's how he has perfected his life. So we can see in this example of Vishwamitra Muni also that so many relative defeats and also relative victories he had in his life. But he is exhibiting in this example in Ramayana absolute victory. An absolute victory in surrendering everything unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is what we can learn from this example of Vritrasura also. That although Vritrasura was relatively defeated, in fact he is announcing that you are supposed to defeat me. But then he knows within that he is going to be absolutely victorious by going back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.